We're all in uncharted territory looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Happy Thursday, everybody. Glad you're with us. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN2. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Our phone guests will join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mike Golic, Trey Wingo here with you. Junior off a little vacation.
Yep, he is. And I made the set better once he left. He was so busy showing his thigh meat with his short shorts.
Oh, dear God.
And it looked uncomfortable, you guys just sitting in your chairs. I was sitting on the couch.
You did win big time with the couch.
Well, it's my house.
That's fair.
So, you know,
house rules.
Dibs. When they said there's going to be a couch and two
chairs,
they were like, there's going to be a couch and two chairs. Who gets the couch? I'm like, are you seriously even asking? You moved all this equipment into my house.
Yeah.
I get the choice of where it's going to go. And you guys sit in the chairs. And I always ask Mike, why don't you get a footstool, something to get your feet up on? And he always says he wanted to show off his thighs, which was kind of disgusting.
I will say, though, it does make
I have brought in a footstool.
It's much better.
You like it?
So way better.
Outside of the best addition of being down in my basement has been the pugs coming in and out of the set whenever they want.
Correct.
It is now the comfort of a footstool.
So we are finding out what the comfort level will be for teams in the bubble headed to the NBA.
Is there a comfort level?
Well, it's a sliding scale depending on who you talk to. So for more on the decision to do that and the actual decision, we're delighted to be joined by our ESPN NBA insider, Brian Windhorst. By the way, Sunday at 9, we'll have the backstory with Don Van Natta on the decision leading up to the 10th anniversary. My God, it's almost been 10 years already since 10 years ago come July that LeBron James announced he would be taking his talents to South Beach.
And by the way, how many high school football players or basketball players, when they made their announcement, they'd have their three hats in front of them and say, I'm taking my talents to Alabama, or I'm taking my talents to Auburn or something. It's like, wow, he started a movement there.
He certainly did. So for more on that, we'll get to in a little bit. We're delighted to be joined, as I said, by Windhorst. Brian, let's start with the decision with the bubble. Where are we? We're hearing some, I don't know, cracks in the wall maybe from some GMs who are beginning to get a little concerned with all the spikes of COVID in the Florida area. What are you hearing?
Yeah, you know, there's been so many players test positive in the last couple of days. And look, I'm not blaming the NBA for this, but there's no media access right now. The media doesn't get in to the practice facility to see who's there. I've talked to people who've told me it's dozens of players. They're not announcing. Some of the players are self-identifying, which is their right. The teams don't seem to be all that concerned about it because they want to find the players who are sick right now so that they can get them treated and try to eradicate the coronavirus from the teams before they go into the bubble. But it's still not very settling. It's still upsetting to see all of this and all of these players who are surprised that they have it and then are worried. And this is really a function of two things. Number one, obviously, you have to have the bubble be safe from an outbreak. If there's an outbreak, this will not last. If a team has a number of players get sick while in the bubble, that is going to be a threat to the whole thing. But this is also about confidence. How much confidence do you have that this will work and you won't get sick? And that's what is under pressure right now. It's under pressure from these guys finding out their teammates have it. It's under pressure from seeing these numbers in Florida. It's under pressure from a lot of different things, thinking about saying goodbye to their families and not seeing them for, in some cases, well over a month. All of that stuff has to hold for this bubble to even get started on day one. And I can imagine, as everyone's coming to grips with this, that there is going to be some shaky periods here without question.
So what's your level of certainty now as opposed to what it was, say, a week ago that this is going to be pulled off?
Based on my conversations, Trey, it's like this. Here's how these conversations go. Boy, I'm really worried about this. It's unsettling, but I'm still going. And this is why I've been saying that this thing may just be too big to fail. There's so much money involved for the individual players, for the league itself, not only for this season, but also to, in some respects, to protect next season. Because if this doesn't happen, the loss of revenue would cause a cratering to next season's numbers. I don't know if the pressure from the dangers can hold, but right now, the motivations, basically the money, if I may be so coarse, the money is big enough that it's keeping everybody on track to going. We'll see if that holds.
That's not shocking at all. Money drives so much in this. I mean, it's the easy thing to say because it's the truest thing out there. As Brian Windhorst joins us here on Golic and Wingo. So we see Avery Bradley is not going to go from the Lakers, and it looks like J.R. Smith would be that guy to replace him. Wendy, what other players are out there to when it's going to happen? There's going to be other players that test positive or aren't going that, and that roster spot needs to be filled. Are there players out there that can be signed in your mind that could make a big difference for a team?
Not really. And normally I would say we're talking about the 15th man. That doesn't matter in the playoffs. However, I have no idea how this is going to go. I can't say to you that when we get to the second or third round of the playoffs that, you know, three or four of the Lakers may not have gotten injured or be off quarantining because they're sick. And the 15th man might end up getting a starting job. That's the thing. Like, you know, normally it's only 13 players active. And in this case, each team is bringing 17 players in because they're bringing their two-way guys, essentially, you know, two of their, you know, their swing guys from the G League. Normally you wouldn't focus too much, again, on that back end of the roster. But guys, this in some cases, and I don't think it's going to be this way, but for some teams, this could end up being about a war of attrition. We hope that's not the case. We hope that it's representative. We hope that the stars stay healthy. But how am I supposed to know? So if I'm an organization, particularly an organization that may be looking at this like, oh my gosh, we may have to go into October, and we may have to realize that we may have to deal with the infection on some players along the way, I've got to build the strongest 17-man team that I can. And so that means that your decisions on these back-end guys are going to be important maybe. And so, look, J.R. Smith hasn't played in the NBA since November of 2018. I have no possible way of being able to tell you what J.R. Smith can contribute to an NBA team after, you know, approaching 2 years of not playing a game. But he could end up being important. And there's no manual here. It's not like, well, back in 76 or back in 94 or back in 2007, there's nothing to go on. So these guys are in some ways just hidden and hoping.
Let me just throw out a name. Mike, you just brought it up.
What about a retired guy? Yes. Like a Dwayne Wade?
Yeah, I don't think those guys are in, you know, if you've been retired for this long, I don't know if you're in the shape to do this, but if I was Dwayne Wade, if he called me and said, hey, what do you think I would do? I would say, stay in your house. Stay the heck away from this. You don't need it.
it is interesting, right? Because we all understand that an injury can affect the competitive balance. We saw it in the finals last year when Kevin Durant went out, changed the dynamic completely. Could the Raptors have still won? Absolutely. But without Kevin Durant, it certainly became a lot easier, and also Klay Thompson. So we understand that point of it. But then there's a whole different discussion, right? If it's several players that are unavailable for weeks because of, I mean, it's a medical issue, but it's not an injury that involves their inability to play. It's their inability to play because they don't want to spread it to other teammates. Then it becomes sort of a what are we doing scenario here, right?
Yeah, like here's the thing. Like, I don't want to be too cavalier here. I mean, there's been a number of athletes who have been asymptomatic, had this virus, tested positive, said, wow, I didn't even know I had a sore throat. I thought I was fine. Gone back to training and been cool. But I don't want to be cavalier and say, oh, you've got COVID-19? Okay, we'll see you in 2 weeks. We expect your production level to be the same. This is a virus that we don't know about. And I see, you know, people just sort of moving past, yeah, he tested positive. He'll be ready to go next week, or he'll be ready to go in 2 weeks. And I'm like, I don't know that. How do I know that? How do I know it's going to affect people differently? This is not a sprained ankle. Yet the league is proceeding like it is something that is easily recoverable from. And like part of me wants to scream and say, what are you talking about? This potentially deadly virus that is inflicting a quarter of your team, you're going to be A-okay by July 31st. How can you say that? And then the other part of me says, well, look, there's all these other players who this was no big deal about, and the rates of people in their 20s who are healthy shows that this barely does anything. And I don't know which is right. I don't know if I'm being a calloused SOB to say, yeah, he's got coronavirus. He'll be back in 15 to 18 days. Or, boy, he's got the coronavirus. I don't know how his career is going to be impacted. I don't know which of those is right. And so I'm sitting here just trying to figure this out. And I don't know if you're a team. Like, you know, we have some teams that have 3 and 4 guys testing positive already. That's a quarter of their roster. You know, what does that mean? I don't know. And that's what this is such a complicated thing, because there's just nothing to go on. And this is why I say that one of the big factors in this whole thing is confidence. Because if teammates see a guy go away for 2 weeks, and then he comes back after he's cleared, and he pops forward off the bus and is bouncing around saying, let's go, I'm ready to play, I think it was like, okay, then COVID-19's not so bad. If one of their teammates gets sick and all of a sudden is, you know, has to not come back and is gone for 2-3 months because the thing lingers, that affects it differently. And I don't know which it's going to be. I don't know if it's going to be some of both or what. And that's what makes all of this like fascinating. From a viewer, it's like, oh my God, this is amazing. But actually living in it, it's extremely disconcerting.
Well, and you go to the players, and we've talked about this before. If you're a player, they think of it as, well, I'm sick for a little bit and then I'm back. You look at Malcolm Brogdon from the Pacers, who tested positive. He said, I'm doing well, feeling well, progressing well. I plan on joining my teammates in Orlando. Jabari Parker from the Kings, self-isolating after testing positive. I'm progressing in my recovery, feeling well. I look forward to joining my teammates in Orlando. So they're thinking like, okay, 10 days, 2 weeks. I don't feel very good. I'll be better and I'll jump back in on the team. So we will see how it all goes as teams will start to get there in the beginning of July. But, Brian, one of the other things we wanted to talk to you about, again, as Trey mentioned, Sunday at 9 Eastern, the backstory with Don Van Natta on the decision leading up to the 10th anniversary of LeBron James announcing he would take my talents to South Beach. So, first off, when you just go back to this is July, it'll be 10 years, but we're doing the backstory, obviously, Sunday. Take us back there and just, again, your recollections of that day.
Well, the day itself, you know, is difficult. You know, social media wasn't what it, I mean, it existed.
Right.
But it just wasn't ubiquitous. So
correct.
There were significant reports out there that he was going to Miami. I had reported, I'm working at the Cleveland Plain Dealer, but I had 30,000 Twitter followers. You know, I didn't have, you know, 750,000. Or like, you know, Woj has multiple millions. And so I really do think that a lot of people, even though those of us in the media knew he was going to Miami, I don't think that it had gotten out to the people. It was a true, genuine news event. So I perceived it differently. I knew at the beginning of the show that he was going. And then when people freaked out, I was like, wow, social media really hasn't, because we were still under the impression that social media, you know, we would tweet it out and people would see it. Clearly that wasn't the case back then. But, you know, it's funny that you mentioned the hats, because at one time, the hats was an idea that LeBron had. He wanted to have, like, the Cavs and the Bulls and the Knicks and put the Heat hat on. And you know what? That would have been better. You know, the other thing, I think, in history, you know, that thing raised $2 million for charity, but you would never know that by watching the show. And certainly, anything they talked about with the charity of it came after he announced the decision where everybody turned their TV off. You know, because nobody ever saw the back half of the show because most people turned it off. What they should have done was they should have had a check, and the opening sequence should have been a check for $2 million to the Boys and Girls Club so that everybody could be reminded that this was about charity. The reason we were here was about charity. And that's why the late David Stern talked about the biggest sin of the whole thing was not necessarily the idea, although he didn't like the idea either, but the execution of it. And you know what's funny? If you go back and watch the day before Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh announced their intention to sign with the Heat on the Noon Sports Center, it happened at 12:01. It was handled by Mike Wilbon. The interview was 4 minutes long. He asked each of them 4 questions. They announced their decision, explained their decision, and talked about a couple other things, and that was it. It was very clean. And you look back at it, and you compare how Wilbon handled it to the way LeBron handled it, it was night and day. There was it was one of these things, and it's the classic thing in human nature. LeBron was focused on whether he could do this, whether he could get a free hour of national television, as opposed to whether he should do it. And the funny thing is, he's learned so much from that. And if you look a couple of weeks ago, he hosted a national television show to honor the graduating seniors. It was on all three networks. It was beautifully produced and beautifully done. President Obama spoke at it. And you look at it and say, that's what they've learned in 10 years. But, man, that first step was a disaster one.
Shout out to Greenwich Heights, Greenwich, Connecticut. It was the Greenwich Boys and Girls Club, my hometown, where that took place. And it's funny, Brian, like, I mean this sincerely. Outside of LeBron, I'm not sure anybody's life was changed more by the decision than you. I mean, you basically started to follow LeBron wherever he went, and it's been such an unbelievable ride.
Yeah, you know, to peel the curtain back a little bit, you know, I was working at the Cleveland Plain Dealer, and ESPN had talked to me about coming to join their operations in New York and Los Angeles, or New York or Chicago, because that's what we thought. It was either going to be Cleveland or Chicago or maybe New York. ESPN had no operation. You know, Levitard didn't have his whole crew set up in Miami. There was no ESPN operation in Miami. And so he stunned us when he went to Miami, and it took several months for ESPN to say, hey, okay, we now want you to go to Miami. But it was, you know, my life was changed dramatically as a 25-year-old when I was covering the Cavs as fresh out of college, really. And LeBron, the Cavs won the lottery, sitting in that room in Secaucus, New Jersey. I knew my life had changed. And when LeBron announced he was going to Miami, I knew my life had changed. Maybe not necessarily that I was going to go to Miami with him, but obviously it was going to change what I did day to day. So it was a huge, huge thing. And I'll tell you, LeBron had never lived away from home, so to speak, you know, from Akron. I mean, I had moved to Cleveland, but essentially had lived at home. And when he moved to Miami, and you know, he'd been all over the world. I had been all over the world covering him. It wasn't like we never stepped out of Northeast Ohio, but for the first time, we both moved away from our homes, and some of the struggles that he went through his first year in Miami, I felt them too, being at you know, at that time I was like 31 or 32, away from my home area for the first time. So I, you know, we were on parallel tracks that were separated by a lot, but I kind of could feel some of the stuff he was going through.
LeBron James was 25 when that happened.
Good God almighty.
And now you know we would certainly do it differently. That's
sure.
A little bit of age, a little bit of experience brings a little bit of wisdom to a situation, but he's 25 at that time.
Absolutely crazy. Wow. So, again, that'll be Sunday night, 9 o'clock Eastern on ESPN. Brian, as always, we appreciate the time. Thanks, man.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
Thanks, Brian. It was July 8th,
yeah.
10 years ago. This July 8th would be the 10-year anniversary. And I remember watching that. And you're right. You learn how to do things. That's why whenever the horse races, the Triple Crown is on, it's an hour show. And when is the race?
Yeah.
It's the last 10 minutes.
Correct.
You know, you don't want the race in the first, you know, half hour because everybody then will turn it off. As Brian said, he made this announcement during it. Everybody kind of shut it off after that, and they still had more to go. You'd probably wait more toward the end. And then, you know, that thing got criticized only to be saved and not criticized anymore because of the parade they held down there. The not one, not two, not three, not seven, not whatever. You know, like, okay. Who?
they were counting them before they won one.
That didn't age well.
I tell you, it's really interesting. Like, the one of the brain trusts behind that was Jim Gray. You know, it was his
idea
to pitch the show. Mm-hmm. And while it got criticized a lot, it did draw a massive number.
Of course it did.
For ESPN.
And go ahead.
No, you'll get.
And it was interesting what Brian said about social media at that point. He just had 30,000 followers, where he humble bragged to 750,000 now, and then talked about a Woj with a few million.
Yeah.
How different it was. They think if they tweeted out, everybody knew about it. Because let's be honest, you try that now, everybody's already going to know, right?
Correct.
There is no way
Correct.
You pull off a decision now, show like that. With whoever would do it, it would say it would be Zion in 3 years. Zion Williamson trying to pull this off. There's no way it gets pulled off without everybody knowing already where he's going, right?
I tell you, you're right. I mean, we can't even do the schedule release show without all the schedules out there by the team accounts. But so it's kind of funny. But a kind of funny backstory, because that was in 2010. Well, and it obviously it was criticized, but it got a huge rating. But then in 2012, because Jim Gray lives in the Denver area, or is from the Denver area. I can't remember one or the other. But when Peyton Manning was on the free agent market and was going around, the story was that Jim Gray went to Peyton and said, hey, would you like to do like a decision? And Peyton was like, yeah, no, I ain't doing that.
I don't see Peyton doing
that's
something
a hard pass.
Like that.
That's a hard pass for me, dog. You know.
And again, LeBron was 25.
Yeah.
I mean, 25 years old, and you look back and you go, and I'm sure, listen, at the end it raised $2 million, so the money went to something very good, no doubt about that. But I'm sure we all look back on things we did earlier in life and go, ooh, cringe a little bit, said, yeah, I maybe would have done that a little bit different. Anybody who ever says I would do everything exactly the same is lying. There's always something you would tweak a little bit.
You would absolutely change a thing. And I thought what Brian said at the top there, if they'd started the show with here's a $2 million check, which was, I think it would be looked at through a different prism.
And if it was an hour show, waited till the 50 mark to do the actual announcement, and then, you know, a few minutes for the why and the interview, and then, boom, good night, everybody.
Yeah.
You know, have them hang around.
10 years, man.
10 years.
Unbelievable how long it's been. Again, the backstory, Sunday night, 9 o'clock Eastern. You can check it out. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Wow.
All right, you know what's not a lot of fun? What may be happening to college athletics if college football isn't played, and we're already sort of seeing some of those economic ramifications. Right. What does that mean going forward for the landscape of college sports? We'll talk to one of those prominent collegiate sports coaches across all spectrums. We'll get to that after the...
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Golic and Wingo here with you. By the way, we're getting a lot of news this morning. We had the news that started with from Adam Schefter that the Hall of Fame game, the preseason game between the Cowboys and Steelers, has been canceled, and the induction ceremony has been at least postponed. Then we learned this morning that both Lane Kiffin, Ole Miss head football coach, and Mike Leach, Mississippi State head football coach, are joining together to lobby the state legislature of Mississippi to change the flag, which currently still has a Confederate flag symbol as part of the flag. And then this just happened, Mike. Churchill Downs announced this morning that after consulting with Governor Andy Beshear and state public health officials, the 146th running of the Kentucky Derby will occur with spectators under strict guidelines. And that will begin. Kentucky Derby Week is going to be held September 1st through the 5th with the Oaks on Friday, September 4th, and the Derby itself on Saturday, September 5th. And we don't see exactly yet. I'll have to look at what the guidelines are. But in just about 2 months, they're planning on Run for the Roses with fans in attendance.
A little over 8 weeks. So I guess like anything else, Trey, you can have the plan to have that and try and put protocols in place to say we think at this point we can have fans. But certainly if, depending on the area, the spike at that time, you may have to abort that and say, okay, this was our plan, but now we know it's not going to be a good idea. So in all honesty, I don't mind them planning that.
Right.
It's still 2 months, so we'll see what happens in actuality when we get to that date.
As our friend Herm Edwards says, any plan that can't be changed is a bad plan.
Yeah.
So you can have the plan, but just understand based on circumstances, you may need to change that plan.
Or you can have a plan against Mike Tyson until he punches you in the face. Or you can have a plan to play the UConn women's basketball team until 5 minutes into the game you're down 20.
Exactly. Yeah. So everything is adaptable and is a movable target at this point. And for more on that last thing you talked about.
How about that for a segue?
It was well done.
Well,
and the changing landscape of college sports in the light of what is and isn't happening, we're delighted to be joined by Gino Auriemma, UConn women's basketball coach. Gino, we appreciate your time. First and foremost, have your athletes started to come back on campus? Yes. And how has the testing process been, if they have been?
Well, you guys bring up a good point. You know, every plan has an exit strategy, you know, and the plan was we're going to bring them back end of June and start working out July 1st because we thought we would be able to do that. Then it's like, okay, well, you can't work out till July 20th. All right, so why should we bring them in early? All right, let's bring them in a little bit later. Well, then we don't want them to go home. Wait a minute. We're going to be here from July or June, late June, early July, all the way to Christmas. That doesn't make sense. So how about we bring them in and start working out August 1st? So that's the plan. Come in, start working out August 1st. Well, now every time you pick up the paper or listen to you guys, there's another spike on some other campus with some athletes, and people are being locked down. So we're like everybody else. Like, we know what we want to do, but what we're going to be able to do might be two different things. And what's the right thing to do might be, you know, something that I think should always guide us.
Is your confidence waning in the fact that we will actually have sports in the fall, especially on the collegiate level?
Well, Mike, you know this better than anybody. If college football wasn't a $4 billion, whatever it is, operation, they would have canceled fall sports already. So everything humanly possible, I'm sure, is going to be done to protect college football. So having said that, my confidence is okay until something happens that severely impacts college football, and then all bets are off.
Yeah. True. That's a true statement.
No question about it. And Gino, you were, you know, I remember this vividly from March. It was a post-game press conference when you were talking about the non-shaking hands thing, and you said it so plainly. It was like, wait a minute, they're telling us to elbow bump after a game, but we're playing a game where we're leaning on each other, we're sweating on each other, we're all touching the basketball, but bumping elbows is going to save us from not getting the virus. Yeah. I mean, did you know how far ahead of the game you were at the time when you said that?
I just thought, you know what, and I still think some of this, guys, how much of this is based on scientific evidence because you can't even get the doctors to agree, and how much of this is optics where, listen, we want to make it look like we are doing everything we're supposed to do in case you-know-what hits the fan and we want to protect our butts.
Yeah.
Like, how much of this is which is happening the most of? Because I read in the Wall Street Journal, you know, experts saying, listen, there's one way you're going to get this, right? Face-to-face contact with somebody who infects you and you don't have a mask or whatever the precautions might be. All right, so then why are we wiping everything down? Why can't we come up with something that everybody understands and makes sense? And then you flip forward 2 days, and then you read, listen, if you're in the same space indoors with somebody and this stuff is in the air, you're going to get it. Well, holy moly, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, as we used to say in Catholic school, make up your minds. Which is it? So everybody's trying to come up with ways to deal with it, but how much of it is based on science and how much of it is based on we want to make sure it looks right?
Yeah.
And you know what's happening, guys? These young people all over America are going, you know what? Screw this. You know, unfortunately, this is the unfortunate thing, guys. Here in Connecticut, we've done a great job. You know, Mike, you live here.
Yep.
Trey, you know, we've done a fabulous job, better than most states, of flattening the curve, as they say. But you know, 70% maybe of all the deaths that we've had, unfortunately, have been nursing home related or people that have been compromised or, you know, and so the percentage of people that we're seeing go hang out at beaches, go to restaurants, go to bars, they haven't been affected by this, so they feel invincible. So it was just a matter of time before they were just going to spill out into the open.
Without question, young and invincible. We all went down that road at some point, no doubt about that. As we're talking to Gino Auriemma, head coach of the women's UConn basketball team, and we already see how COVID has affected colleges. We've seen colleges dropping programs because of the loss in revenue. It's happened at your school there, UConn. They've dropped men's tennis, cross country, swimming and driving, diving, and women's rowing as they're trying to cut $10 million out of their budget, what all colleges are doing. And so there's that part of it, Gino, what the pandemic is causing. And then there's the other, obviously, huge issue going on in the United States with social injustice and what's happened since the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis. And a couple of your players, and I know going through colleges, coaches love coaching players to see what they do in their field of play, but also they get to see that person grow over the 4, 3, 4, 5 years they're with them. And you've had some great, obviously, some of the greatest players to ever go on a court. But also the people that you've coached, Maya Moore, Renee Montgomery, two young ladies that, one in Maya Moore who's already stopped playing some basketball for causes she is trying to fight. And now Renee Montgomery has said she is not playing in this WNBA season because of the social injustices, and she wants to focus all her energy on that. So we know they're great basketball players, Gino, but you had them there and saw them grow into adults. So talk about them and just what this means to you and seeing them do what they're doing.
Well, it's a great point, Mike. People that are passionate in life, they don't necessarily distinguish when, where, or how to be passionate. They're just passionate individuals. They have strong beliefs. They show that. They live that every day. So Maya Moore, Renee Montgomery, they had big games. When they played, you knew they were on the court. They impacted the game so many ways. And that passion, that drive, that commitment, you know, as you get older, you start to see, hey, there's other things going on in life that are more important in some ways, in a lot of ways for a lot of people, than how many basketball games we win and how many points I score, whatever the case may be. So in Maya's case, you know, she decided at the peak of her career to say, I want to fight for this injustice where this person that I've known from Missouri has been incarcerated unfairly, unjustly. And I'm going to work my butt off to rectify that. And if that means me giving up my career, then that's what I'm going to do. And that's what she did. So to me, the same courage that Maya showed as a basketball player, she's now showing as a human being. And Renee now has, you know, had a decision to make. Do I spend every waking moment as much as I can getting ready to play another basketball game, or do I get involved in the process of trying to change what it is that we're dealing with today on social issues? So I'm proud of them as human beings that it's not lip service to them. You know, I made this comment once, and maybe I'll get, you know, in trouble for this, but when I was with the Olympic team, and we had this issue before, you know, where all the, you know, both teams, we went and we did, you know, these appearances at these community centers, and we talked, and we sat down, and we listened, and we met with people, and it was all well and good, and everybody thought, you know, we're doing something really, really good. But then what happened after that? Everybody went back to their jobs. Everybody went back to work. Everybody went back to pursuing their careers. And then what? So there's something to be said for they said it, Maya and Renee said it, and now they're living it. And to me, I couldn't have more respect and be more proud of them than anything that they could ever do.
And Renee will join us tomorrow morning, so we'll be happy to talk to her. Gino, always good to talk to you, man. Hope you and yours are well and safe, and hopefully we'll be talking about something on the court a little bit later on. But thanks for being with us this morning.
Hey, you know, you guys are really smart guys, just like all the other guys at ESPN, but I want sports back for one reason. Man, I'm tired of listening to you guys talk. I want to see sports on TV, man.
Listen,
enough with you guys.
We agree.
Listen, on that we can all agree.
I'm sick of me.
We're 100%. Listen, I'll call you later and tell you how sick I am of this guy. We'll get into that a little bit later.
Hey, now you all know. Now everybody there knows how your wives feel.
Yeah, boy, that's the truth.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah, that's. I can't get around that.
Thanks, Gino.
Thanks,
appreciate
Gino.
It, thanks, guys. Appreciate
all right,
it.
Have fun. All right, coming up next, the coronavirus concerns are too much for one athlete, one of the best, to get back on the pitch. We'll get to that after this.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your baby to let you sleep in?
What? we could sleep in another half hour?
Yay.
Thanks, sweetheart.
Yay. Never.
And you'll change yourself, too?
Yay.
There's never been a better time to switch to GEICO. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.
Today, Conor said he laid out a plan. He wanted to fight Justin Gaethje now, before Gaethje fought Nurmagomedov.
Khabib.
Thank you.
It's Golic and Wingo.
Fair. I'm never sure each day if it's Devin or Cliff that does that.
It's because, clearly a conspiracy.
Yeah, but both will get hammered once we all get back together. Golic and Wingo is brought to you by Barbasol. Feeling great starts with a great shave, and great shave starts with Barbasol Shaving Cream. That's Barbasol Shaving Cream, an American classic for over 100 years. You're looking good, America. You're shaving with Barbasol. Also, quick note out there, the Golic Family Podcast, sorry in
there
advance,
you go.
Is out. We put it out yesterday. You can get it wherever you can get our, you know, the Golic and Wingo podcast or on our podcast as well. So it is out there, and we had a fun one. Somebody in our group had too much to drink, was out in the sun too long, and fell down.
Pretty sure I know who that is.
Yeah.
I mean, I won't guess on air because I don't want to spoil the surprise of the podcast. Feel pretty good about who that might be.
Not saying a word.
Yep. Sydney, you can't be serious. What was that? Was that out loud? I don't know what you're talking about. I'm not sure. It was great to talk to Gino Auriemma.
Yes, it was.
And he laid it out. It was interesting, right? He talked about, well, we're going to bring him in his women's basketball team. Bring him in June. Well, bring him in July. Now August. I mean, they're
well, we talked to Dawn Staley, the women's coach at South Carolina, and they were talking about July 1st. And we haven't talked to her in a bit. We should see if that's still happening. But now for Gino and the women's team, it looks like at least the end of July, if not the beginning of August.
And again, all this was talked about when we had Gino on, because the Kentucky Derby announced that starting on September 5th when they run the Kentucky Derby with strict guidelines, they're planning. Again, that's the way we have to couch everything. We are planning to have fans at Churchill Downs for the running of the Kentucky Derby.
And again, I don't mind you planning that. It's just like the governor in Texas said, in pro sports, we think we can fill to 25 or 50% capacity. I don't mind a plan for that, but let's see when you actually do it, where is your state, your city, whatever, as far as positive tests, hospitalizations, and unfortunately, you know, the deaths, you know, is it worth doing that? Again, I don't mind the plan. Everybody can have a plan. But just when it's time to really put that plan into play, where are you with all the testing?
Yeah, some of the things in the Kentucky Derby that they're talking about, of venue capacity reductions to limit crowd density, including general admission, outdoor reserve seating, and suites. General admission tickets will be limited to a specific number. Access to the facility will be limited. Credentials for media and guests will be reduced. A revised fan code of conduct. People will have to wear masks. Or no, it says guests will be consistently and frequently encouraged to wear a mask.
So you know,
I don't know what that. So like, what does that mean? Like,
I mean, man, make the guidelines.
Yeah, that
you know?
That sounds to me like the most toothless thing you can say. We frequently and encourage you. How about you either wear a mask or you don't get in?
Yeah,
is it that hard? Is it that hard? Yeah, just say that where we're going to have a ton of people around. If you want to come in, look, they wear the hats at the Kentucky Derby all the time. They have these incredible, make it a mask contest. Come up with the most interesting, unique mask. That seems like a low bar to cross, would it not?
You would think so. You would think so. So that's their plan. Athletes are planning on whether they're going back to their respective teams and sports, as a lot of sports are getting ready to resume or start in July. And one of the things we've talked about in players that have opted not to go back, it has been either for the social injustice issues that they want to fight, it's been for a health concern of a family member, it's been for visitation rights of a family member, it's been for every reason except a player saying, I'm not going because I'm fearful, or I don't want to, you know, have to deal with the possibility of getting the virus. When we finally have our at least the first person publicly I've seen. Evan, if you could put up what she said again. It's Tobin Heath from the U.S. Women's National Team, but also she plays in the NWSL, which is going to play in July. But she has come out and said she is not going to play in the NWSL, for the reason of safety.
Specifically
for her,
the virus.
Specifically
for her,
the yeah. virus for her. Again, Evan, I don't know if we have that. We had that before.
Right.
Her statement of what it was. But that's the first I heard of somebody publicly doing that. Somebody publicly saying, this is why I'm not showing up. I wonder if we'll get more. And this is what she said. Although I want to be on the field with my teammates doing what I love, because of the uncertainty and risk created by COVID-19, I've chosen not to participate in the NWSL Challenge Cup. I can't even express how much I'm looking forward to my next game in Providence Park. So she is choosing, and again, that's the first one, and there may be more, and there have been already, we just haven't seen it publicly, but this is the first I've seen someone come out and say, I'm not reporting to my team for the specific reason of COVID-19.
For her specifically.
For her specifically, exactly.
Because we had Avery Bradley because of his son who had difficulty recovering from respiratory issues. She's the first. I don't think she's going to be the last. And again, I'm not trying to be dramatic here, but how we, like Dr. Fauci said, the next 2 weeks will be critical. Do you want this stuff to come back? Then we need to do these things to mitigate it, because we haven't flattened the curve. We leveled it for a while and it dropped for a bit, but it's going in the other way. And we're the only developed nation where that's going. Everyone else has found a way to get it down. So let's just get on board here. Coming up on Friday, That Bites, James Franklin, Renee Montgomery, Michael Leaves, Dan Orlovsky, and much more. Have a safe Thursday, everybody.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your teenager to help around the house?
Okay, Mom, I emptied the dishwasher, vacuumed the basement, and folded the sheets out of the dryer.
Wait, what?
Oh, and next, I'm going to clean Mitten's litter box.
Are we in some kind of prank show or something? That's a camera, isn't it?
There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.